What makes your eyes dance? When's the last time you left work dancing? Or danced into the house ready to be there with your family? Or came back from a ball game dancing? I've been doing a little deep dive into understanding myself. I've always loved the work done by the Strength Finders group. I used that when I first came here. It's a test you take that determines your five greatest strengths. Many of you have taken this. My top strength is ideation. No surprise there. Here's a few of the characteristics of a person with this kind of strength, my kind of strength, ideation. We are captivated by ideas and enjoy exploring them. We love finding links between things that others might not see. We're natural innovators and love new ideas and fresh perspectives. We love to find simplicity within the complex situation. And we enjoy thinking out of the box. Sounds more than a little like me. But having me as a leader can be overwhelming sometimes. I get bored with the status quo, and I'm always spitballing another way to do something. I'm a great brainstormer, and when I do that, I'm just throwing stuff out there to see what sticks. But many of you misread that and get overwhelmed thinking about all the work it's going to take to make some of this stuff successful. One of my coaches brought me this comic strip once, trying to help me understand how my team might feel around me sometimes when I lead only with my ideation strength, when I let that go without any boundaries. It's a boardroom with one leader, probably me, just throwing out sticky note after sticky note of ideas, all sorts of ideas. It's like a snowstorm. Everything's coming down. And all the others in the room are being covered in these ideas, and they are all overwhelmed. And one of them is just holding one and saying, this one alone is going to take 2 years to get going. My ideation, a good gift when not given boundaries, turns into yuck for others. We are entering the charge conference season in the United Methodist Church. The church is ramping up its administrative meetings to get ready. Our presiding elder or district superintendent will be coming in November, and we will be making these reports to them about how we're doing. A little secret about me, I can't stand charge conference season. It's not my fault. It's just that I'd rather gather to look about the future and brainstorm new ideas for ministry instead of filling out long, dull reports that I often wonder if they are ever even read. In my Strength Finders leadership material, there's a place where they talk about yucks and yays for each strength. And I guess you can tell what my yucks are for ideation, my greatest strength. And the yuck is simply being in a role or a company or an organization that focuses on doing what we've always done, unchanging practices and processes, charge conferences. And the other, being surrounded by closed-minded thinkers. I call them bean counters. Charge conferences, when done well, can be very inspiring, but when the conference just does them as a checklist of things we must get done, they turn into yuck for people like me. And so when I got to church on Tuesday and I looked at my calendar and realized that I was going to be the presiding elder for 3 charge conferences in the area, an incredible sinking feeling came into my heart. And I just felt the energy in my 64-year-old body turning from yay to yuck mode. Now listen, folks, there are a lot of people around us in yuck mode right now. Overwhelmed and sinking. Even when we look at the church's greatest strength, We are compassionate people. That's the Bear Creek way. I hear a lot of whispers about compassion fatigue. This old world's yuck has started to permeate our walls just a bit. I know this because it's permeated my walls. I read this beautiful, wonderful Bear Creek scripture passage this week. A wonderful story about what it is to be a Bear Creek person. The story of a good Samaritan. And I thought about the best part of this story. The part that always gives me goosebumps. You know the part, I think. The part where the good Samaritan, by the way, good for nothing Samaritan is what everybody thought, especially the Jewish folk, because they were half-breeds. And I mean, after the Jewish audience that was listening to this story couldn't stand Samaritans. In the eyes of the Jewish listeners in this story, there was no such thing as a good Samaritan. But suddenly, after everybody else in the community, you know, the Jewish community, the leaders of the Jewish community, passes by this guy on the road, beat up, and the only one that's left is this Samaritan. And he comes up to this guy, this Jewish guy, and looks him in the eye. And it says in the scriptures, he looks at him with compassion. Oh my goodness. Did you see what Jesus, the storyteller, did there? Everybody thought that this Samaritan was going to steal his clothes or kick him again. But no, this no good Samaritan looked at him with compassion and then acted in a way that made you feel like this stranger was his brother. And isn't that Jesus' point? And what do we all do? We do exactly what that audience listening to this story does. We go, what? Are you kidding me? We go, awesome. We go, I can't believe what I just heard. And then we go home thinking and thinking and thinking about Jesus' last words. Go and do likewise. At least that's what I hope we do, and that's what I want to do. I want to be a good Samaritan. But this week when I read the story, I suddenly wondered if this story isn't just too much for us the way we read it. I felt the empty hole in my heart where my own compassion, fatigue had made home, and it suddenly got really heavy. And I suddenly felt this heavy guilt coming from this story. A guilt, by the way, that I don't think Jesus ever meant for us to have, but a guilt that I was holding. I'm a Christian. I should always want to give, 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 give. Compassion is my greatest gift. I should be emptying my life in giving to those needs. I should be losing myself in the care of the world so that when I'm empty, God can fill me up. The world, this world, this needy, needy world, is kind of like me in that boardroom, sending sticky note after sticky note after sticky note after sticky note of need to me. And I pick just one of them up and I say, this is going to take half my salary for the next 10 years. I can't do that. Can I? But if I don't, am I a good Christian anymore? Can I say I too am a good Samaritan? Have we taken this story too far? We've made it an ultimatum. I mean, after all, the good Samaritan, yes, does pause at the road. And yes, does help the poor man there. He takes him to the hotel. He pays for his room and board. But he also, if you read it carefully, has boundaries. He leaves him there and goes on with his business. He goes on down the road. There are boundaries built into the story that we forget. And there ought to be boundaries to our compassion. Healthy boundaries. And the church ought to be encouraging these healthy boundaries instead of making people feel guilty about having them. I'm reading a great novel this week called The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters. And in it, the lead character, Norma, has a man, mom who's just hard to love and live with. She has some great pain, and there's no boundaries to that pain that she's holding. It's always spilling out on her family and her daughter and her relationships. And at one point, Norma writes this about her mother. If my mother did anything well, it was guilt. Sometimes I think the church can fall into this mothering guilt instinct. We want so bad for people to get it, to see others with the eyes of compassion, that instead of helping them find and discover that compassion on their own or creating activities where this compassion can be discovered and nurtured and danced, we instead try to make them be compassionate. We guilt them into it. Folks, we're doing a whole series this month on change makers, and I don't want it to become a guilt thing. In the weeks ahead, we're hoping to help you take a good look at your life and see what changes you might make to it. One of the key images is an orange bird rising from a telephone wire, symbolic as to what we might hope happen to you by the end of this time or during this time. Last week, I primed the pump to this series by asking you the question, what does you make your eyes dance? And this week, our visual team put together a wonderful table full of nests. We want you to feel like the church is a nest, a safe place where you can return after flying around and trying to change, a place where you can reflect about the changes you want to make and are trying to make and be empowered and surrounded by people that will help you do them. We want to be a good mother and father, holding, encouraging, empowering, connecting. And the last thing we want to do is make you feel guilty. This past week, I did a deep dive into where my heart is dancing and where my heart is silent. And I have to say that the most of my greatest joys as a human being have been acts of compassion. I like helping people. My guess is you do too. I have danced the best on the road. I remember one stormy, snowy day in the Dakotas heading up to work. It snowed like 8 inches and it was still snowing. Schools were postponed. I loved doing the walks at our church because we had a new snowblower and I loved that thing. And so I was trying to get up the hill and I had good snow tires and my little Honda Fit was just buzzing up hills. It was great in the snow. But there was this elderly couple in the car ahead of me. And I could see their tires spinning as they went up this hill. And soon their car had stopped and they were going back and forth. Two teenagers in the house across the street ran out in their slippers and shorts to help. And I jumped out in a pickup with a political button I didn't agree with pulled over. And two big burly guys got out and they helped. And we got behind that car and pushed them over the hill. At the top of the hill, right where the church was, this couple rolled down their window and shook my hand and asked me who I was. And I introduced myself and everybody else there. We got to kind of know each other. And off they went. And I thanked the others. And then I went back down to get my car and started my day. And during that day, I thought about two young teenagers. And so I went to the store and I bought them a couple things and dropped them by and thanked them for helping out. They were surprised to say hi to me. And then at church that Sunday, sure enough, there were four of them there, the couple that we'd pushed up and the young, and then later, even the pickup showed up. My eyes were dancing that whole day. That simple act revived my soul. I helped somebody get back on the road. This Tuesday, that day I was in my yuck mode because of all the meetings I knew I had to be at in the next couple of months. I got a knock on my door. I was talking with Bathsheba about music, I'm busy, and Sonia came in and popped her head in. She said, "I need some help." And Ellen McKee's car wouldn't start and the battery was dead. I almost passed her over for a second. I have an electric car. I didn't know how to jump anybody, but I was busy. But then I remembered who I was and whose I was. And I jumped up, and as Estefania, I went over and I asked Estefania if she could help. And Estefania jumped up and said, "Sure." And pretty soon, four of us were out there by Ellen's car. Ellen had the jumper cables. Estefania had the car. I thought I knew how to jump a car. It's been a while. And Sonia was on Google reading me the directions. And by golly, 3 minutes later, Ellen's car was running and she was off towards home. And my eyes were dancing. I felt so good about Estefania and her warm spirit. I felt so good about Sonia helping somebody else. I felt so good about Ellen coming to church. You know, it's so good to see her. I felt good about helping somebody get back on the road. In Richard Rohr's words, I was back in the flow of compassion. Can you do me a favor this week? Don't complicate this. Just do one simple act of kindness for someone this week. Start there. See how it makes you feel. See what it feels like to get back in the flow. Bake some cookies for someone. Pay for someone's coffee behind you in a drive-thru at Starbucks. Go visit somebody. Do like my mom did once for me. Pull the weeds out of my poorly attended garden. Go out of your way and just be nice to someone. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't go save the world. It's not what we're doing. No, just get in the flow and let that good feeling find you again and dance with it. And one last thing. If you are feeling burnt, compassion, fatigue, talk to someone. Talk to me. And maybe, just maybe, the person alongside the road you need to help right now is you. Become.